Second hour, Darren Donick and Chase on this Thursday. Hope everybody's having a good day to this point. We'll hear from former Titan Michael Griffin in the third hour. Also, Dover International Speedway, their president and CEO. Cup race coming to Nashville next year. So we'll talk to them. Dover, the track out at the Nashville Super Speedway, we'll talk to them in the third hour as well. And Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet at 1 o'clock. But right now we talk to Adam Amin, who is the television play-by-play announcer for the Chicago Bulls. And he is on the line with us. Adam, how you doing?
Great to hear from you guys, man. How are you guys doing?
Well, we're hanging in there. 3 months from home, and you know what? We're doing just fine. We would like for sports to come back, though. We would like to talk about something live.
No doubt about it. And maybe we'll have that chance sooner rather than later if the NBA plans and all of its logistics. You know, obviously the structure and skeleton are in place, but if the logistics are put in place, the health and safety of the athletes and their families and all the staff members is at a premium, which I know it is. If they can figure all those logistics out, I do feel like there's a great opportunity to hopefully start talking about sports again, although understandably under the, I don't want to call it a specter, just under the blanket of, you know, what's happening around our country right now, which does take precedence and absolutely 100% should.
No doubt about it. I said when, as you mentioned, the skeleton, the model came out this week on the show, that is one of those meetings, or meetings, I should say plural, that I would have loved to have been in, just sit back and listen to how where they started and how they came to this model of 22 teams and 13 in the West and 9 in the East and just this, you know, everything they've put out there. I would have loved to have been in those meetings.
Yeah, what's the calculations? You know, what's the calculus to get to that number of teams, the particular schedule that they play? And I've seen various justifications and thinking about how we got to this point, why this is the number of games that we wanted. Here's how we move past each game of a schedule if a team's not participating, and this is how we structure it. That's fine. Everything sounds good. I haven't seen the full plan put in front of a lot of us, which, again, I know that will happen probably sooner than rather than later. It does feel like Adam Silver and the Board of Governors are trying to be as transparent with this as possible. They have been fairly progressive about this. I've enjoyed watching leagues try to figure out some of these plans and see where point A is with the destination being point X and what points, you know, B through W have been to try to figure out what the machinations are to get to all these points. You have to have these plans in place based on the information that you currently have. As time has gone on and some of the developments have come up, whether it's medical or otherwise, we're starting to see the reactions, the reading and the reactions from all these leagues. And some leagues clearly have handled it a lot better than others. I would give credit to the NHL for kind of sitting back, waiting to see what happened, knowing that there might be a length of time that they'd have to be sitting out anyway. I appreciate and applaud the NBA for figuring all of this out. Certainly we have some issues with what's happening in Major League Baseball still, which isn't necessarily about the structure of things. It's more so about the finances of it. So I applaud the NBA and the NHL so far for handling this the way they have.
Adam, you brought up what's going on in our country, and really it's more than just our country. It's globally, because we've seen other places around the world react to this horrific story in Minneapolis. But I think, you know, everybody is wanting actions and change and not just words anymore. And I think this has been a real game changer, so to speak, with what's happened in kind of like the last 24 or 48 hours when you think in the sports world. I mean, Drew Brees, who is well-respected and, you know, loved, kind of like the all-American guy, future Hall of Famer. And, you know, even he comes out with us, you know, in an interview on Wednesday, and now you've seen the backlash from even a guy like Drew Brees. You've seen Mike Norvell at Florida State and his players come out and say, wait a minute, whoa, that's not what happened. Mm-hmm. You know, Sacramento Kings, long time, their play-by-play voice for television, you know, stepping down because of comments on social media. Where in the NBA, and the reason I bring this up especially, and I want to get your take, is, you know, the NBA, I kind of feel like has been out in front of everybody else when it comes to their players, you know, speaking out on subject matters and really being out there and having a real voice. I would like for you to weigh in on what you brought up just a minute ago.
If we're talking about why that's the case in the NBA, again, I'm no expert and I'm no sociologist. All I can do is try to read the room and try to connect the dots as best as I can and insert my own perspective, my own individual experiences as a man of color. By the way, as a man of color, that doesn't give me a free pass to say whatever I want. I need to be more, and I'd like to consider myself as a conscientious person, an aware person of what my friends feel, about what people I care about feel and what they think about. And I still have to do, even as a man of color, I have to do a better job of listening because I have an Americanized name. I work in a fairly white business industry. I work in a predominantly white job as play-by-play announcer. And I probably still get a free pass because of a lot of those things. And people look at me and I have lighter skin than my father did. So it's probably a lot easier for me as a South Asian person to kind of fly under the radar. I even have to do a better job. All of us have to do a better job of trying to listen a little bit more. And the reason I think this is the case in the NBA, the stars for years in this league have been predominantly black. And when you're in a smaller locker room with predominantly black superstars, you know, there are 25 to 30 gravitational players in the NBA and they're predominantly black. So when you're a white person or a person of a different ethnic background, racial background, whatever it may be, those guys are already at the forefront. So you're going to listen to them. And when you listen to them, then suddenly your eyes open up, your ears open up, your heart probably opens up. I would venture to say that's the case for a lot of white and non-black athletes in the NBA. And it doesn't seem that hard. I'd like to think that when I say it in these simplified terms, it is not that hard to just listen and not just hear. You know, not to make it a black and white thing, but that the movie White Men Can't Jump, when Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson are having that back and forth about listening and hearing. You're hearing Jimmy, but you ain't listening to him. And there is a difference between those two things. Hearing somebody and listening to them are two very distinct things. And I appreciate the NBA for allowing their main, if you want to put it that way, commodity, are athletes, superstars, players. They run that league. They're the ones who people come to see. And when you give them carte blanche to say what they're feeling, what's important to them, why it's important to them, and the reasonings behind it, not just the effects of what is taking place, not just seeing broken glass or seeing a police officer get pushed back by a group, that's an effect, maybe. We're not looking at the causes. And I give a lot of credit to Adam Silver, a lot of these general managers in the NBA who have said, I want my players to speak. I listened to a podcast with three old white coaches yesterday, Greg Popovich, Steve Kerr, Pete Carroll. And all three of them, the common thread that they talked about was listening, trying to listen to their players and what are their concerns. If we have to rein them in for their own safety or whatever, fine, so be it. But I want them to go out. I want them to speak because people will listen to them. It's unfortunate that you have to be a multimillionaire athlete for somebody to pay attention to you sometimes. And I don't think that's the case for everybody. I'm sure that's more of an extreme case. But I'm glad that coaches, GMs, and the commissioner of the NBA are giving these players the right, not even the right, it's inherent. You should be allowed to speak up on issues that affect you, and not just you, but your community, and in turn, the rest of us. We're all interconnected in this thing, and if it affects your community, eventually, if not directly, it will indirectly affect mine, and I want to make sure your community is good so that all of us can kind of bask in some goodness together. And I know that's a really idyllic, Pollyannish way to think about it, but it's not that hard. There's a lot of simplicity to this, and we're kind of losing the view of the forest in the middle of the trees.
Very, very well said. Adam Amin is here with us from Fox Sports and the Chicago Bulls here in Darren Donican Chase. And you touched on it a little bit, but just the importance of, you know, non-black athletes or coaches speaking out and being able to talk about this, just how important that is to try and get this message across and make some change.
Allies are important, and I, you know, my former colleague Jalen Rose, who, you know, was a Chicago Bull for a while, and I've worked with him on various broadcasts, and we've hung out, we've enjoyed drinks together, we've enjoyed food together, we've enjoyed conversation and laughter together. So when I saw him last week, I think it was Friday morning, if I'm not mistaken, when this really started to gain some steam, this movement started to gain a lot of steam, he said, "We've been yelling for your assistance for a long time. Like, we need your help. Like, allies are exceptionally important." Anytime you look back in history, more often than not, anytime, but more often than not, when you have seen progress and you've seen change for a marginalized group, it is because somebody from a prioritized group has advocated for them. And it doesn't have to be direct. It can be indirect action. It can be, it doesn't have to be right, you know, right in the middle of a protest. Like, maybe you don't feel safe protesting. I saw a great one of those flow charts today. Maybe you don't feel safe protesting, whether it's a medical thing, whether you're afraid of police brutality or some of the methods that have been used. Okay, what else can you do? Can you donate instead of donating your time, can you donate some money? Can you find a cause? Can you do some research? Can you talk to some people? These are all, I know they feel like little things, and I'm talking to a lot of white people right now. I want you to know that I don't speak for all people of color. I'm just saying I sense your hesitation because you may feel confused. You may feel helpless. You may feel like you're patronizing. The effort, just the effort of doing something is a lot more than what a lot of people of color have been getting from prioritized groups for a long time. So if it's little effort by a lot of people, that adds up. So don't feel like because you haven't gone out in the street and protested or you haven't took a knee in front of armed police officers that you don't have the opportunity to help. And I think that's what a lot of white athletes are realizing. Like, I don't have to do everything directly. I can help in a lot of ways. I can be on the periphery and still protect the values that my teammates, my friends, the people in my community are trying to uphold. So I understand your hesitance. I understand your helplessness. There are a lot of black people that feel helpless right now too. So don't feel like nobody sympathizes or empathizes with you, okay? It's not easy. Change is never easy. Even small incremental change is not easy. But something that can lead to change is of value, even if it's starting with something small.
Adam Amin here with us on Darren Donick and Chase, and very, very, very well said, powerful words. But I do want to talk about you a little bit because you've obviously made a change by joining Fox Sports. You spent a long time at ESPN and then also the Chicago Bulls to be their television play-by-play announcer. So what has that journey over the past few months been like for you to make that change, leaving ESPN for Fox and the Bulls?
9 years at one place, in particular, a place that helped me grow up in a lot of ways. I got hired when I was 24, unbeknownst to me why, and probably to the chagrin of some other people. But I got hired at 24, and I had to navigate through a lot. I was a kid who got thrust into, you know, a national stage, granted at a smaller level, and I'm glad that was the case. I wasn't doing a lot of high-profile stuff to begin with, and I'm thankful for that because I needed to learn on the job. And I talked with a very prominent broadcaster who used to work at ESPN last week, and he said, when you spend so much time of your formative years at one place, and I'm sure a lot of you who've had really good jobs that helped, you know, launch you into that next level of professional status, financial status, whatever it may be, you probably look back at that first job and think, man, that was a really great experience. I hope that that's how you feel. I certainly felt that way. And it's hard to, this broadcaster told me, it's almost like you're giving away a piece of your soul. Because it's not just the professional growth for me, it was the personal growth. I've made probably my best friends that I'll have for the rest of my life in that job. You know, that was the proxy for me becoming friends with those people and having those opportunities to build relationships and then keep them. And the change was necessary for me. I needed to advance. I felt like this was the right time, the right situation, professionally and personally. It was the right thing for me to do. And to have, you know, a national platform and then the dream job in my hometown is, I couldn't ask for more. And at some point I'll celebrate a lot, you know, with a lot more fervor, when it's a little bit more appropriate, and I'll celebrate with all you guys. And next time I'm in Nashville, first round's on me. How about that?
Hey, I like it. We know how to have a good time here in Nashville.
I know it, brother. I know it a lot. Absolutely.
We've been known to do that. So you take over as the TV play-by-play for the Bulls, and obviously a lot of discussion about the Chicago Bulls with the success of The Last Dance and seeing Michael Jordan and learning some things. So what did you think of the documentary? And I know it's a completely different organization and team now, but
right.
that maybe – You know, you did learn some things that you didn't know, I guess, about Chicago at that time, about the Bulls at that time in Jordan.
I think like a lot of us, we probably had a sense of the treetop headlines of a lot of these stories. Jordan going to Atlantic City, Dennis Rodman going to Las Vegas for a couple days, Dennis Rodman going to that the WCW Monday Nitro thing. I completely forgot that that was in the midst of the NBA Finals. I completely forgot. And I was obsessed, as a lot of 11 and 12-year-olds at that time were, with the Monday Night Wars. Like, I was obsessed with it, and I could not even fathom that it was at the same time as the NBA Finals. That memory had been erased from my head. So a lot of the nuances and the machinations of all of these major stories, it was the first time that I really had a chance to learn about these things and really dive deep into them and the kind of intricacies of the relationships of everybody on the team and with Phil Jackson and everything like that. It was very eye-opening. It was thoroughly entertaining. You know, I know it's a very one-sided documentary for the most part. You know, Michael Jordan had a hand in it. So I call it a documentary in so much as it's a document of events that happened to take place. But it was thoroughly, thoroughly, thoroughly entertaining. I mentioned Steve Kerr, his story, which I've known for a long time. I have a great connection with Steve, I'm glad that a lot of people came to realize, you know, his background and about his father, Malcolm, and learn about his story and see what the genesis is for a lot of his humanity. So I was enthralled from start to finish for 5 weeks, 2 hours every Sunday night. It was must-watch TV, and I know a lot of other people felt the same way too.
Adam, we laughed on this show. I mean, just think about 22, 23 years ago, them getting away with that. Can you imagine today? I mean, think about, people went nuts when Tony Romo and Jason went to Cabo on an off week. Could you imagine Michael Jordan, a superstar like that in today's game, golfing with the opponent in between games in a series, or what you're talking about during the NBA Finals? What would happen?
I can only imagine the backlash. And by the way, I also like to believe that some of the events we witnessed in The Last Dance maybe made us rethink, like, do we need to really complain about some of the things that we that we have these debates and arguments about? Like, and especially under this current circumstance, again, not to bring it down. I'm not trying to do that. Like, I know we're taking a few minutes to be lighthearted here, but like there are some serious things going on in this world. So maybe it gives us a little bit more perspective on, like, what really is a good debate in the sports world and what is not a good debate in the sports world. And maybe that'll help us narrow it down, because Cabo doesn't seem like that big of a deal now, does it, compared to some of the things that we saw in some of the biggest games of the NBA calendar during those Bulls runs. I'm like you guys, man. It gives me a really good laugh just kind of thinking about the prioritization of some of these stories.
I'm sure Tony Romo was watching going, see, are you guys kidding me? You crushed me for this.
You'll appreciate this, Adam. So after that episode aired and they were talking about Nitro and Rodman going to Nitro, we actually got Eric Bischoff on, who was the president of WCW at the time. And he told a story. He goes, well, here's the deal on that, because I referenced, you know, Rodman and Malone kind of fighting on the court. And he goes, well, I had to be careful about what I suggested, because Turner Sports owned WCW, and obviously the NBA had a relationship with Turner, but I may or may not have kind of suggested to Dennis, you know, if you wanted to up things a little bit,
to hype it up
because they had already agreed to the match. Yeah, that wouldn't necessarily – he's like, I'm not telling you what to do, hint, hint, nudge, nudge. And I had never heard that before and thought that was hilarious.
The impressive marketing that both Eric Bischoff and Vince McMahon put together, and you know, current status for those gentlemen aside, like 22 years ago, when I'm just a kid and I'm not worried about it, I look back on those moves those alleged moves, so to speak, and just think, man, they really knew how to do it. They really knew how to market it. You know, I don't think it's ever been as popular. And I know wrestling has had a wonderful sense of popularity for a long time in this country. It's something that just draws people in. It's an entertaining thing. But I don't know if it'll ever reach that level of just ridiculousness and peak marketing. I don't think we'll ever have something like that ever again.
Adam, really appreciate the visit. Thanks for your perspective. I really enjoyed your work at ESPN. Best of luck in your new adventure with Fox Sports and doing the play-by-play on television for the Bulls. You're really good at what you do. I kind of feel like it was the hot dog eating contest that was the rocket ship for you. I feel that way.
If you're trying to get a laugh out of me, I'm not, because I'm dead serious about covering that hot dog eating contest. All right, gentlemen, it was an absolute blast. Seriously, I had a wonderful, wonderful 9 years at ESPN. I'm thankful for people like you guys who felt like what I did was valuable. I hope we continue to maintain that relationship. And seriously, thanks for letting me talk on some of this stuff. I'm sure it helps me a lot more than it helps other people. It's a nice way to just get some stuff off my old chest, so I appreciate it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Best of luck, and thanks for the visit, and we'd love to talk to you down the road. Thanks for doing this.
Absolutely, boys. Appreciate you.
All right, that is Adam Amin, and you just heard a really good stuff from him. He is the television play-by-play guy for the Chicago Bulls. He's now with Fox Sports. You just heard him. He's just 33 years old. I mean, you're talking about a guy
same
who's carved out a career. I mean, how about that? Started off basically at ESPN, as you just heard his journey with us, and we appreciate him joining us. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase next.